Hey, this is Johnny D from Doro. Pour yourself a nice cup of Java, kick back, and enjoy the rock and roll and coffee show.
Welcome to episode 43 of the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show, and tonight's guest is musician, bassist, Tim Gaines.
Yeah, Tim Gaines of Striper fame. He's been with Striper. He played with Striper for years. I think he recently just quit back in 2015 or something like that. And now he's playing with Aldo Nova. He's played with a bunch of people, even Richard Marx.
Yeah. And then he also started his career, I believe, with a band called Stormer that was pretty big in the LA scene.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to him about all that stuff tonight and find out what happened with Striper. I don't really know the story behind why he left Striper.
Yeah, you hear different stories here and there. You don't know what's true. So yeah, maybe we'll find out tonight.
If you're liking the show, please follow us on Instagram at R&R Coffee Show. And also visit our website at R&R Coffee Show. What is our website, Nick?
R&R. I don't know. R&R coffeeshow.com.
Go there, sign up on the mailing list, and you may win a prize in our giveaways.
Ooh, what kind of prize?
Well, why don't you sign up on our mailing list, and maybe you'll win a prize.
Ooh, I could win? I'm not disqualified for being a member of the show?
Yes, you are. You're out.
Damn.
So let's call Tim. Get on this conversation.
Let's give him a ring.
Hey, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim. It's Joe and Nick with the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show. How are you, bud?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's going on, Tim? Thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm honored. You know, I've been a Striper fan for a long time and a fan of yours. I'm also a bass player, so I've been a fan of yours. And cool. Yeah, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us tonight.
Awesome. Glad to do it.
Where are you located?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. What time is it out there?
It is 7.
Okay, so 2 hours.
2 hours.
So, yeah. Tim, let me ask you this. How was your 2020?
2020 was...
Hey, what you been doing?
In spite of everything that's happened, it wasn't so bad, you know.
Right.
Can't complain, but I managed to stay healthy, and
that's good. You
know, hoping it'll stay that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, we got a new present yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
I saw your
You mean
was that your Facebook?
You mean the fake president?
the fake president?
No, I saw your post. You've changed your picture up on your Facebook the other day.
Yeah, I changed it a few times.
But... Yeah, and you got all kinds of crap on there.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people that hate Trump, and I'm not one of them. But
yeah,
there's a lot of people that disagreed with me, and oh well.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I don't care who you like, you know. It's
funny to see. Either. Yeah,
it's funny to see how people react, though. It's just crazy.
Yeah, normally I'm not one to make posts about politics or anything like that. I just, you know, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way how things turned out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I posted the picture, and boy, that sure set off a lot of people.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But listen, I want to talk to you about you and your career, your journey that you've had.
Sure.
So tell me, like, when did you first start playing bass?
Yeah. So, that would have been around 75 late 75, I started, or middle of 75, I started playing acoustic guitar, classical guitar. And I found that I was really attracted towards the bass end of things. And I heard a lot of bass in the music that I listened to, and so I just kind of gravitated towards the bass. So my first bass was actually an acoustic guitar, and I took the top two strings off and turned it into a little bass.
Play bass on the guitar.
yeah. And so I was about 13. I was 13 at that point, 14th birthday. My parents got me my first bass.
Okay. Who had the guitar?
That was mine. Oh, actually, it was a sister. I have two older sisters that both play guitar.
Okay.
So you're from, you're from a musical family?
Hippie movement. Yeah. Say again?
Are you from a musical family?
Yeah. I got a brother who's a singer, songwriter. Okay. I got two sisters that played guitar and sang back in the day. So
you grew up around music.
Yeah.
Music. On my dad's side, I have cousins that were jazz musicians, and an uncle, a nightclub performer. There was a lot of music growing up, and I grew up in the church, so there was, you know, choir music and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you. So you were in the church when you were a child, also.
Yeah, grew up. My dad's a pastor, so I've been around it as long as I've been alive.
Now you were going on that path also at one point, weren't you?
You know, there was. I did end up going to Bible college, of all things, in 2007. Wow. And I realized that that really wasn't what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I thought it was. And so I dropped out. But, you know, everybody seems to get the calling at some point to go into that if you're a Christian. And some people take it further than I did. But I decided music was where I was supposed to stay at.
Yeah, yeah. What so when you were 14, when you started playing bass, how soon after that did you get into your first band?
Gosh, that was probably right away. I mean, I was in junior high. Let's see. Just starting junior high school. So I had some buddies that their brothers played in bands, and that kind of turned me on to music too. They were like garage bands. We'd go over there and watch them practice. And I just, you know, the whole thing was kind of cool. So we started forming bands of our own. And, you know, 14, 15 years old, I was, from then on, I was playing in bands the whole time.
Were you self-taught?
I am, for the most part. I've taken lessons. At first, I took lessons, and they just put you through music books, you know. And yeah. I played piano before that, so I already, you know, knew music, and I played clarinet in school, and so I knew music, so I wasn't really learning anything other than the basics. And I listened to a lot of records, and, you know, influenced by a lot of different bass players and bands. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much how I grew as a musician.
Yeah, you had a good foundation there.
Yeah.
Who were some of your influences when you were first starting?
Well, I'd have to say when I first started, the guy that really got me the most, I think, was Dee Murray, who was the bass player for Elton John's band. Mm-hmm. And him and Nigel Olsen, the drummer, had just a phenomenal rhythm section in those early Elton John albums. And so I gravitated towards that. So Dee Murray, and then I got into, you know, some of the harder rock groups at the time, you know, in the mid 70s. And that was, you know, Aerosmith and Queen and Zeppelin. And, sure. And so I was listening to all that stuff too. But I gravitated more towards melodic players, bass mm-hmm. players.
Yeah.
You know, D. Murray was one of them. Later on, I got into, you know, the jazz guys like Jocko and went that whole route, you know. I think I listened to pretty much everybody that was out there at the time, and you know, I never wanted to be just stuck in one genre,
right?
Listen to one genre or style of music. So,
right,
I listened to everything.
Now, was your first band Stormer, or did that come a little bit later?
That came later. I was in my first band. I can't remember the name of it. We were just a bunch of school kids, and we played, you know, just around the house and parties and things like that. It wasn't really, gosh, what were we called? I can't remember. Touch, I think.
Touch.
I mean, we were 14 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I was in probably three or four different bands growing up, and then I got into Stormer. I was in a band called Afton Kid, which actually did a lot of stuff in Hollywood. And then after that, I was in a band called White Lace, and we were just like a rock band, top 40 band, and didn't have any original songs, but we'd get hired to play at people's parties. And one of the bands that was throwing a party was Stormer. They used to hire bands to come play their own parties. And so they hired us to play at one of their parties, and that's where they discovered me. So I joined Stormer in 1981. I was still in high school.
Okay.
And older than me.
This was in L.A.?
In L.A.,
okay. Yeah. Did you grow up there?
I did.
Okay. Okay.
I did.
Okay. So when you joined Stormer, did they already have a following, or were they just starting? Yeah.
So Stormer was one of the bigger bands in L.A. in the 70s. And they went through several variations, but they had a guitar player when Van Halen was in their heyday, and their guitar player's name was Jimmy Bates, and they kind of played in the same vein. Eddie Van Halen, Jimmy Bates, and there's another guy, Terry Kilgore, and we're talking like mid 70s, 76, 77, 78, and so anyways, Stormer and Van Halen played back to back all the time. You can see flyers on the web all over the place.
Okay. That's cool.
But when I joined the band, we signed a record deal, and nothing ever came of it. Hmm. That was in 82. We did some recording. We released a single, Christmas single. And
Christmas,
yeah. So we did Christmas songs, original Christmas songs.
Wow!
And it was at the time. It was to go out to radio stations for Christmas season, and they were going to. The thought was that they would play our song, which it got a little bit of airplay, but the thought was that they'd play our song, and then the album would be released later on the next year, or following year. And
yeah.
And of course nothing ever happened. So,
yeah.
But it was a great band, great singer, great guitar player. Donnie Simmons was a guitar player when I was in the band, and Steve Hall was the drummer and, original drummer. I think the original member from the start of the band.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Hardy was a singer. And so we did shows all over the place, big shows, little shows. We did some touring, and I ended up leaving the band in late 82 or early 83. I can't remember, but it's time for me to go.
So go ahead, Nick.
No, I was going to say, is that when you joined up with the guys from Striper? Did you know them?
Just before. Yeah, and
yeah.
Well, Striper, they were called Rock's Regime at the time.
Okay.
And we, you know, we knew each other and seen each other playing at Gazzari's. That was on the Sunset Strip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was in other bands at the time, but we we all, you know, everybody knew each other, the guys in Rat and Motley guys, you know, Quiet Riot. Everybody was, you know, aware of everybody. We all hung out together.
You all played the same scene?
Same scene, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting in that band August of 83. That would have been Rock's Regime at the time. And they had called me up. They saw one of the local magazines, you know, like it was called BAM Magazine. There was a flyer in there of Stormer, and they noticed that I wasn't in the picture in this flyer. I'd quit the band. And so they called the number to see what happened to the bass player, and they said that I had quit and become a Christian. And they had happened to be looking for a Christian.
I was going to say that's probably what they were looking for, right?
Yeah. So they ended up getting my number somehow. They called my house, and I went down and met the guys the next day, and ended up joining the band, and the rest is history.
Wow. So that was what, 83? You said?
Yeah, that would have been around August 83.
So the first Striper album came out in what, 84, right?
84. So yeah, I joined the band. We had been recording demos. There's a Rock's Regime demo floating around somewhere. I think that the guys even released it at some point.
I'll have to see if I can find an album.
Yeah, I think you can get it on Amazon or wherever the record stand is.
Right.
But that's the original recordings that we did. And then we recorded, we got signed to Enigma Records, and then recorded the first EP, Yellow and Black Attack. And gosh, I don't remember what month that came out, but that would have been early 84. Uh-huh. And somewhere in 84. They asked us to change the name from Rock's Regime. They didn't like the name, so Robert came up with Striper for some reason.
Rock's was with two X's, wasn't it?
Two Hard X's, yeah.
Gotta love the 80s.
Fun times.
Yeah. Now you left the band shortly after that, didn't you, for a little while?
I was out. I can't really say I was out, but everybody makes a big deal about during To Hell with the Devil. I didn't play on the album. I was actually out of the band, or you know, I guess you could say I quit the band at that point. Yeah. The guys, we finished the Soldiers tour and took some time off, and I hadn't heard from the guys in months. You know, I knew we had an album to record, and I had just gotten married, and just it was silence from their end. So I got a phone call one day, and they wanted to talk to me. And I kind of have a feeling something's going on.
Right.
So I drove down from at that time I was living up in Burbank, just north of Hollywood, and drove down to Orange County where they were at, and had a meeting. And they said that they didn't want to use me on the album. And so I kind of got upset, and you know,
so
it's probably understandable. You know, it's like I'm in a band.
You were
equal with you guys,
still in the band, but they didn't want you to play on the record,
right?
What was the reasoning?
Yeah, why was that?
I don't know the exact reasoning, but they said the producer I wasn't up to par as far as what they were looking for as far as the studio went. So,
okay.
You know, and at the time I probably wasn't, you know, it's being a bass player in the studio is a lot different than being a live player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken time for me to figure all that out mm-hmm. over the years.
Yeah.
I think I'm a better bass player in the studio now than I am a live player.
Yeah.
But, you know, things go in reverse. Right. But at the time, you know, it hurt my feelings. I got ticked off, and, you know, I left the band for, I don't know, however long it was, maybe a month or 2 months while they were in the studio. And they had gotten another bass player to come in and take my place to record the album. And then it turned out he wasn't cutting the par either for the album. So they got a studio guy to come in, a guy named Brad Cobb, who played on To Hell with the Devil. He played on In God We Trust, the follow-up to that.
Right.
And so he was a guy that they ended up using in the studio. I guess, don't ask me why I wasn't there at the time, but he was the one, Brad Cobb, who played on that record. And so I had kept in contact with Oz during this time, during the recording, and then it came time for them to go out on the road, and they were in rehearsals, and Oz was telling me that things weren't working out with this other bass player that they had replaced me with. So they said they wanted to have another meeting with me. So I went down and met with them, and they said, well, we're leaving in 2 days to start this tour, the beginning of the To Hell with the Devil tour. And they wanted me back in the band if I would come back. So I did.
Yeah.
And I learned all the songs in a few days. And we played, where did we play? Disney World. Big, nice. Huge show at Disney World in, I think it was 86. Early 86 or middle of 86. So that was my first show back with Striper. It was on the To Hell with the Devil tour. And that started everything off.
So you had to learn those songs in a couple of days, but they didn't think you could play them in the studio.
Yeah, well, that's, it's different live. So, and it wasn't just those songs either. It was, you know, the songs we had done previously.
Yeah.
So we did songs from Yell and Black Attack and Soldiers Under Command, and then a few of the new songs.
All right.
And we just incorporated those more into the show as time went on, and as the tour progressed, and you kind of make up your set list every night and add songs, take away songs.
Now, To Hell with the Devil came out, and that's really what put you guys up to the top.
Yeah, and the one song that really took us over the edge was the ballad, honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we did the videos for Calling on You and Free. And they did really well on MTV. But it was that third song, it was the ballad, honestly, that just like suddenly it was being played on the radio. And, you know, we were in the top 40. The album just went up, you know, on Billboard. And that was towards the end of the tour also. So we had been touring that whole time.
I remember all those songs on MTV. You couldn't turn MTV on for 30 minutes and not see you guys on there back then.
I mean, there was that what was it called, Dial MTV, where people call in every day and
and
vote for your favorite video, and we were like number one for god, it seemed like that whole year practically. It was just,
were you just blown away by it
every day? But I mean, we weren't, I mean, you paid attention to it, but we were also on tour.
Yeah,
we toured like 9 months, and you know, see, and back then it was like you're in your hotel room getting ready for the day, and they're playing the local, you know, every day. We had MTV on because we're watching what was going on, and you know, they play commercials, and then they'd whatever time that show came on, it was in the late afternoon, and then once again number one or number two or whatever, and we're always beating, or not beating out, but you know, having a competition. I think Bon Jovi was number one or number two. It was like always back and forth, or Poison or whoever. Yeah. So it was good times.
Yeah. So when on that tour, did you guys go out with Jet Boy? Did they open for you?
We on that would have been In God We Trust.
Was it In God We Trust? Because I think I was trying to remember. I saw you guys in I think it was Fort Myers, Florida, And I want to say Jet Boy opened, but I thought it was On to Hell with the Devil, but I could be wrong.
It may, gosh, I think it was the very end of In God We Trust tour. Because we did White Lion, and then I think Jet Boy. Because yeah, To Hell was Hurricane. Most of the time was with Hurricane, and then we did also TNT and Loudness was on the bill with us for a month or two. Also,
yeah, it must have been In God We Trust then, because I didn't see those bands. But we did meet you guys at a Kmart on that tour. Do you ever remember doing in stores? You do you remember doing in stores at Kmart?
Yeah, I remember a couple of them.
Yeah,
they had a set up in the lawn and gardening department.
that's where we met you, Kmart.
That was probably the one.
Yeah, Kmart, for people that don't know what Kmart is that are listening, is like a Walmart and Target.
Walmart, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you guys were top of the charts at that time, selling out shows. I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. So that was the other thing we were doing. And we went from like clubs on this whole tour. It went from clubs, large capacity clubs, and then we were doing theaters. And then all of a sudden it went to arenas, and we were selling out, seemed like nightly, you know, 15,000 seats a night. And we were, merchandise was doing great. I mean, we were at the time, the same company that did Prince and Madonna was also doing our merchandise, and they were saying that we were outselling them, Madonna and Prince, by, I don't know, we were doing like $9 a head. Mm-hmm. Versus whatever they were doing, you know, $3 or $4 a head. So we're selling merchandise. We had a lot of cool different things, you know, shirts and hats and earrings and, you know, all the jewelry, the, you know, sweat outfits, jackets. We had everything.
Yeah.
The guys, Nice Man Merchandising, they really came up with a lot of cool merch.
Yeah. Now with you guys being a Christian band, was there any hesitation or questions from the label of putting you guys out there?
And they didn't know when they signed us, when we did the first album, Yellow and Black Attack. They just thought we were a regular rock band. Mm-hmm. And when they went in the studio and heard the lyrics, they're hearing there's a song called From Wrong to Right, and the words are Jesus Is the Way. And
yeah, you guys didn't hide what? Your lyrics.
No, we didn't. And so they, I don't know. Bill and Wes Hine were the head guys at Enigma Records, and I think they ended up just going with it because we were popular in L.A. before the album was ever released. So yeah. We had a huge following.
So your peers were, you know, like you said, Rat, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue. I mean, did you guys, I mean, we all know the stories that, you know, with those bands. Did you guys participate in all those antics? And were you a rock band like that?
You guys a party band?
When I was in Stormer, I was. Uh-huh. I think that was one of the things that I guess you could say I left the band because I had done so much of that stuff. I was, you know,
just getting out of control
with a lot of women and drinking a lot and snorting a lot of drugs and not that I'm proud of any of it, but it's like I finally came to a point where I was done with that, and I was 19 years old, and I had been doing a lot of different things. I hung out with those guys. Tommy Lee and I hung out a lot. It was just, you know, stuff that we did, you know, we partied, and that's, you're young and party, and, you know, there's
in a rock band,
you're in a rock band and there's a lot of women around and you have fun.
Yeah, sure.
So, but you know, Striper, we pretty much walked the straight and narrow. Up until, you know, later on in the band, I'd say, Against the Law days, where, you know, we had gone through a phase of rebellion, mm-hmm. where we were, you know, because we had done right for so long, and the people in the church were coming against us constantly, like every day we'd be picketed, you know, by Christians at our own show. People with bullhorns screaming at us, and, you know, you go through the Bible Belt and it's like they believe one way, and you go to the you know, West Coast, and they believe a different way, and it's like all these people are tugging and pulling at you,
yeah,
from every different direction. Christians, I should say. Uh-huh. And gosh, it got to the point where we were just like, we were burned out.
Yeah.
We'd been on the road forever. We were self-policing each other. Like, if you didn't do the right thing, somebody was on the phone to management, and, you know, it's like, so you couldn't really enjoy being out on the road.
Yeah.
After a while.
So how does that transition take place? So when you went from the Straight Road and then into the Against the Law album, you know, when things started, I mean, yeah, how did that, you just decide one day, just screw it and do it, or
for what? Me, it was gradual. I think for me, it was like the only way I could deal with, doing it, day after day was, you know, I go back to my room and I drink a few beers and then a few more beers. And that led to, you know, drinking, for me, mm-hmm. You know, I like to drink beer at that point.
And sure.
I did for a long time. And, you know, the other guys, I'll let them, you know, they can speak for themselves, but yeah. I know for me personally, it's like the only way I could deal with it, was to not get intoxicated, but just to take the edge off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so that's not a big deal. I mean, a lot mm-hmm. of people drink beer. A lot sure. of people drink wine, and, you know, but, you know, for me, that's what it was. I smoked a lot of cigarettes and I drank a lot of beer, but I never did drugs, and
yeah,
tried to stay clean in other directions. So
that's awesome. What? So, In God We Trust, you did not play on that album either.
No.
Wait, so you got off tour. I mean, how did that come up again?
So on that one, it's kind of the same situation. So we went into the studio, and so Michael writes about this in his book, but I think he got him backwards, because he's basically said that on To Hell with the Devil that I didn't play because we got in the studio and things weren't working out. But I, at that point, I had never heard those songs. I never went in the studio with Striper for To Hell with the Devil. But In God We Trust, we got in the studio, and kind of the same situation again, where I set up my gear, and the producer comes up to me one day. I was set to track the next morning, and so I was setting up my gear, and he's said, "Well, we don't want you to play on the album." And
wasn't like, the same geez. Producer, was it?
Those damn different producers.
Well, you know, Michael Sweet was the producer. The, you know, whoever his name was on the thing, it was ultimately what Michael wanted. So, mm-hmm. you know, at that point, it was,
yeah,
you know, it's pretty much his decision if mm-hmm. I played or not. Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming you took that a little easier because it already
happened. It was easier because at that point, I mean, we were successful. I was still there, so it wasn't like they were giving me the cold shoulder like they did the other time.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, this time I was there. We were all hanging out. I had pretty much learned the song, so it wasn't like I was being ousted or anything. I just,
yeah,
it was just a decision that was made. So they had the same guy come in and play on that album. And so yeah, whatever, it's a time thing, I guess, you know, you're spending $1,500 a day in the studio and you want to get stuff done quickly. Yeah, not to say
I guess I
couldn't have done it quickly. I mean, I have, but
yeah,
it's just, you know, I don't know. It's, you go in, you get the drums done. That's the biggest deal. You know, you get the drums finished and get a good drum sound. You make sure that your drum tracks are really pumping, and then you lay everything else down. So they could spend weeks on guitars, but, you know, I usually was under pressure to get the bass stuff done, you know, in a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but
sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
The next album you did play on, except one song, right?
Yeah, so Against the Law was full band album. So the other ones, by the way, were, you know, it was like the songs were written. There was no rehearsal. It was just like everything was done in the studio.
Oh, okay.
On Against the Law, we went into like a pre-production for months, and we hung out as a band, and we were friends, and we were all having a good time. And just it shows on that record that, you know, the just the feel of it.
Yeah, I love that record.
You know, yeah,
we got together in the studio, rehearsal studio, and worked those songs out every day, and so we were ready when we went in the recording studio. It just everything came natural, and we knew what we were going to do, and it was great. It was a great recording, great record.
Now, you didn't play on Shining Star on that one, right?
And then, yeah, so Shining Star,
yeah,
and pretty much so Randy Jackson played on that, and he's, you know, American Idol,
yeah, right,
you know, yeah, Guessing Journey, and mm-hmm. So he played that song, and pretty much does what I did, but in the verses he adds the funk part, which I didn't do. I was playing something different, so they wanted something different than what I had played on it, and he brought it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, out of everybody, I remember, so the day that they were auditioning bass players to come in and play on that song, I remember they kept bringing people in, and I was sitting out in the lobby of the studio, and I'm watching these guys come in, and they go in and they'd leave. And it was like one after that, they must have brought in, I don't know, 10 different bass players that tried to play that song, and they couldn't find anybody. And and so Tom Werman, who was the producer of that album, he was friends with Randy, and he thought he'd be perfect. And I'm like going, well, I'd rather have somebody who's known like Randy Jackson take my place than a bunch of these unknown guys.
Yeah, just some guy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was great. I'm glad he played on it, and he made the song totally killer. It sounds great.
Did you play his bass line live, or did you do your way?
I did his, what he did.
Okay. All right.
And it's funkier. It sounds great.
Yeah. Were you into funk, or, I mean, what, you were into jazz, I know, correct?
Yeah. I was in funk music. So when I started playing bass, it was when the whole disco scene was,
oh yeah,
was coming alive, you know, in the late 70s. And so I was like Saturday Night Fever, everything on those records I had learned. So I knew how to play disco, but
I love disco. Maybe because I'm a bass player.
Disco's great. For a bass player, it's great. It's,
yeah,
it's fun music to play. Funk music, I mean, I was into Earth, Wind, and Fire. I was more at that point into bands like Aerosmith. And
right.
I wanted to be a rocker. And so, you know, that funk came later for me. It's like, I listened to, me and my wife the other night, we were listening to a bunch of funk music on YouTube, just went through these videos, you know, here's the top songs for, you know, top 50 songs for 1978, you know, we'd sit there and just watch all the videos over and over again. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So when did you leave Striper again? Was that after Against the Law?
So we'll see. So the first time when I didn't play on To Hell, that was in 86. That was for a month and a half, 2 months, whatever it was. The second time I left the band was in 2004, end of 2004.
Okay, so that was a ways away.
Yeah, so, you know, we had stayed together. Michael left the band in 92 to do a solo thing. And then the three of us, we stayed together for another year as a three-piece. And we did shows in Europe. Oz was singing the lead vocals.
Right.
We did shows in Europe, and we played a few. And we looked for another singer at the time. And, there was a band called Bride. Dale Thompson was a singer for Bride. He got in the band for, I think he did one show with us, and he was out.
One show.
One show with this guy, you know, as a lead singer, and he didn't want anything to do with it. So he was out. And then, you know, we just kind of disbanded from around 93 on until, you know, for six, seven years. 2000 to 2000 or 2001, we ended up going in the studio to do some songs for a greatest hits album.
Uh-huh.
And so we did a couple new songs, and then from there we went, did some shows. Oh, so me and, let me back up here.
Yeah.
So me and Oz started this band called Stendizzy. That was in 93. Right, right. 93, 94, we put out an album, and it was actually pretty good. Of course, you know, nobody was getting signed or anything, so it was a struggle to keep the band together. I think it was 98, where 98 or 99, Stendizzy and Michael Sweet as a solo artist, we did this big show in Puerto Rico and in San Juan, and the place was packed.
Right.
Like 10,000 people in this outdoor arena, and my band Stendizzy played, Oz was singing lead, and then Michael Sweet played. And then we got together at the very end, and we did some Striper songs, and the place just went crazy.
Nice.
So from then on, it was like, well, maybe we can put this thing back together and make it work. So we did this album, and I think it was 2000, this another greatest hits album. And then we, what did we do? Started touring, did some shows. 2004, we did our last show in Puerto Rico, and I think for that time when we got back together, it was just like we're playing dumpy clubs, and it wasn't really like the glory days.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to remember things as it was. You know, we went out, you know, with selling out the big arenas and stuff, and now we're playing these dingy bars, and it wasn't fun. You know, we're sleeping like we were.
Yeah.
Back when we first started with five guys, six guys in a hotel room, you know, and, you know, people are sleeping on the floor, and, you know, everybody's
unfortunately doubled up in bed. You guys weren't the only ones in that situation back then, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them got caught up in that.
That's kind of how everything ended up.
Yeah.
After the 80s. So some other stuff went down, and I was just like, you know, I was kind of tired. I was burnt out. I didn't want to do it. So I had left the band again, and that was end of 2004.
Uh-huh.
And so they had gotten a guy named Tracy Ferry, who was in Michael Sweet's solo band. He took my place, and he was in the band up until 2009. And so that's, I was out for those 5 years. I don't know what happened at that point.
Uh-huh. And then did you go back, or was that it?
No, that was, I went back in 2009. Michael's wife had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to pay my respects. I flew up for the funeral, it just kind of, after that, I think Michael was like, you know, touched that I would make the trip all the way up from, you know, to pay my respects. And he wanted to do this reunion, the 25th anniversary reunion tour, I guess, whatever, however it worked out. He was going to have, he asked if I was interested in doing it. I said, sure. And so he was going to have the new music. They had put out two albums, Reborn and Murder by Pride. They were going to have Tracy play on the new music, and then he was going to have me play on the old songs that I had played with. And so we were working out this whole 25th anniversary tour in 2009, 2010, and whenever it happened. And then Tracy backed out at the last minute, and I ended up being the bass player for that tour, the whole tour. And from then on, it was just like, well, you know, we're back in the swing of things again, and I was back in the band. So it just kind of happened. I came back on a temporary basis, and as things progressed, it just, you know, we were getting more shows and doing more recordings and put out more albums. And I think we did some better albums than we did back in the 80s.
Yeah.
We recorded, what was it called? The Covering, which was,
yeah, that was, you know, cover songs, right?
Covers. Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. We did, three other studio albums. So.
Man, you guys have done a lot of albums. You guys have a great career. You know that? I'm sure you know that, but
yes.
Yeah, Joe, I think he knows that.
It's been a wild ride. You know, I never thought, you know, I would have done almost 35 years, 34 years playing in the same band. And you know, it was a ride. It was a up and down, but it, you know, has good times and had some great times, but
sure.
Totally blessed to have been able to do it. I'm proud of what I did in the past, what we did and what we accomplished.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's awesome stuff. I mean,
you were in the band up until 2015. Was that when you quit for the last time, or what happened?
What happened with that? 2016. So we did two tours in 2016. We did the final tour that I played on was the 30th anniversary for To Hell with the Devil. And so we did 2 months on the road with that. And then I had a lot of personal issues going on with the marriage breaking up, and just some stuff went down. And so they ended up firing me for what they call a hostile environment or something along those lines. They didn't think I was workable at that time, or they were able to work with me, I should say.
Right.
Which, you know, whatever. I was there, you know, I showed up every day and did my job. So
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I was officially let go in May. I think it was May 30th of 2017.
Okay. So, and then you were doing projects after that also.
Yeah. And I'd been before that and after that. Yeah. I mean, I try to stay busy anyways. I like playing with different people. So I had worked with, the first thing that we did, it was a friend of mine from Orange County, Giancarlo Floridia, who had a band called Faith's Edge. And he had asked me while I was still in Striper to play on one of their albums. And I did. And that came out in 2015. And then he did another one. It came out in 2017. Mm-hmm. I can't think straight anymore. But yeah.
I'm with you.
I know. It's like all this stuff goes by and you're not dates anymore.
Yeah.
But, so I played on a second album. that came out in 2017, and then did an album with Of Gods and Monsters, and that's Kevin Gutcher on vocals and Joey Tafoya on guitar and Dean Castronovo on drums, and we did some shows with that, and we did that up until the end of last year, last year.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
So we had done some shows and just tried to promote the album. We had a lot of fun more than anything else. Great guys. And then I kind of hooked up with Aldo Nova.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
2018. Let's see, what year is this? 21. So it was the end of 2019. He was looking for a bass player. And just because of Facebook, he saw my picture pop by on his newsfeed, and he clicked on it and sent me a message and asked if I was interested in doing some shows with him. And I said, sure. And so he...
Hold on one second. So he saw you on Facebook, and that's...
Yeah, I had no idea who I was or...
Really? Oh, wow.
It was just going off a picture that I had posted. It ended up in his newsfeed or one of those spots on Facebook where there's people you might know.
I'm sure he's had heard of Striper before, though, right? When you told him?
I don't know if he knew much about us. He ended up later on, I think, learning or whatever you want to say, discovering more.
Very interesting.
But I mean, we kind of hit it off, and he flew me up to Montreal to do a video for one of his songs. Excuse me. And so that was the first time I had met him and met some of the other guys in the band. And since then, it's like, we had planned to do some touring, and because of the COVID, everything's been shut down. And but he's kept me busy doing videos. He does all these videos for the fans, and so I've been doing some videos and some recording for him, and he's a good guy. I really enjoy working with him. He's got a great new album coming out. It's a rock opera.
Are you playing on it or no?
I played on one song. I'm not sure if it'll be used or not, but I will see.
Yeah.
The Life and Times of Eddie Gage is his rock opera. It's phenomenal. So we'll see what happens. We have plans for next year. I'm already in 21. So this year, to do some touring if the world opens up again. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
You think, what's your opinion on that? You think things will get started again this year or no?
I don't know.
It's so hard to say.
We'll see what happens. Now that Biden's in, we'll see if the whole COVID thing just disappears. Yeah. You never know.
That would be interesting.
He's going to cure COVID. Yeah.
I think, they used it politically, at least here in the States, to drive a wedge between everybody. And, they closed the whole country down, if not the whole world for that matter. But, I'd be interested to see if, because of the vaccine being available and if things start tapering off here, if they will open up.
Yeah,
I think it would be great, but I don't know. I think we're still probably a year away.
Yeah, that's kind of... Someone asked me about it the other day, and I said, I think, just my opinion, I would think maybe by the end of this year we'll.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, it'd be ideal for summertime concerts to open up. But God, who knows?
Yeah. So you released a solo album Breakfast at Timothy's. In 2009. Any plans on doing another solo album?
Yeah, I got I got lots of plans.
you're busy. You stay busy, so I'm sure you do.
I just delusions of grandeur, I guess. I don't know. It's like I'd love to do more, but it's like I at this point it's like I don't even know why I would bother. Just I don't know. I guess there's people that would listen to it, but it would be pretty hard to do a tour behind it. But I'd like to put a band together and do some club shows and just have fun with it. Mainly to enjoy things rather than be on a tight schedule.
Yeah. Well, you have such a huge career in music. I mean, you ever think about writing a book?
Yeah, I pretty much have it written.
You do?
But I am like, you know, at that point, I may do some edits on the thing. There's some stuff I probably change now that I had written down a few years ago that I probably wouldn't release now. But I don't know. It's just, and again, it's like, what do I want to do with it? You know, and you know, is the purpose to portray my boring life or to portray the life, you know, I had with Striper, or, you know, and there's still some things, you know, I still have a future. So, you know, I may hold off a year or two and see what happens.
Oh, I'm sure your life isn't boring.
Any any chance of getting back with Striper?
What's that, Nick?
No, I was asking him, any chance of getting back with Striper, or is that a done deal?
That's a done deal.
Yeah.
You don't speak to them?
I haven't talked to the guys since I was fired. So what is this? Four years now.
Yeah.
And they've moved on. They've got a good guy in the band, and I think they're all happy and doing well. And
yeah.
And I wish them the best.
Yeah. Do you like their new stuff, or have you heard it? Or
to be honest, I haven't heard it. I haven't heard any of it.
Yeah.
I think I heard one song. I can't remember what it was. I saw a video, but I don't even think I listened to the whole thing. I just
no interest.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, the Aldenova thing's got to be, that's got to be fun.
Yeah, and like I said, he's great. I mean, he's a phenomenal artist all the way around, songwriter, guitar player, keyboard player, singer. I mean, he plays everything on his records, so it's like, he's... God, and he's produced people. I mean, he's written for some big people. I mean, just Grammy winning artist. I mean, he's done it all.
Yeah.
I've seen some of his videos that he did during COVID, and he seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm hoping that things work out. To where we'll be able to play this year.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Now, I saw somewhere, I forget where I heard, but were you doing lessons, bass lessons?
Yeah, I did for a little bit. I do that every now and then. I do online stuff, you know, where people, you know, do it over Skype or, and I guess now they have Zoom. So Skype is old news.
But I don't even know how to work Zoom.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I'm not a teacher. I consider myself more of a coach, based coach. So I have guys that would sign up and, you know, we'd go over things to help them improve their technique, or sometimes they just wanted to hear how I played a certain song or whatever. So, but you know, I had a few beginning students too. We'd go through a book and, you know, start at square one and but you know, I'm not a teacher. Kind of the same reason why I didn't want to become a minister or pastor. And I'm not the kind of person who does well instructing people.
Yeah, I think that's a special thing you got to have to really be able to do that properly. I think I couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, for me, I still do it, but it's not something that I do on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Tim. Well, listen, man. Again, I appreciate you taking the time. It was an honor to speak to you. You know, and I look forward to seeing what's in the future for you.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. And Nick also.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Tim. Enjoy talking with you.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, you stay safe out there, and we'll see how this year goes.
Yeah, thanks, man. You too.
All right, man. We'll talk to you.
Take care.
All right, bye.
That's all for this week. Join us next week for another episode of the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show podcast. Available on all your favorite podcast listening platforms.